Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up. If they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million, well, I'd buy.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tomas. She's Jay-Z on the board. Jessica Zalusi. Mr. Lou Michaels with us in a second. S&P futures down 2.25. A little bit of mixed bag here. Dow down 54 and the S&P up 5. So yesterday we had a huge rise in the morning, and of course we sold off during the day. I sure wish I was more of a trader these days than I am an investor, because every one of these openings has been a fade. And it's a good trade when that happens, but I don't really do that for my people because they're not that short term. But every one of these openings has been a fade. And whatever the political moves are overnight, we move it in one direction and all of a sudden nobody believes it, and we come back the other way. Lou, how are you?
Good morning, sir.
We had your buddy on yesterday, and we were talking about you.
Oh, really? My ears were not burning, so my ESP radar wasn't working very well. What was the topic?
We had Mr. Robert Raiola.
Oh, yeah.
And he was saying how pleasant it was to not be on with you. No, he didn't say that.
Yeah.
No, he did not say that at all.
He could get a word in edgewise.
No, he was good. Evidently, the new tax laws and everything have made what he does even more important. For those who didn't listen yesterday, Robert Raiola is a tax person to sports people and movie stars and all those kinds of things, because whenever you are one of those people and do stuff in different states.
Let me tell you, what did he mention? Did he mention the impact on divorce payments?
We didn't get to that. He was talking about Bryce Harper. If he signs a $300 million deal, it's going to be $20 million different, whether he's in California or Florida.
Oh, yeah. No, I was just wondering, given some of his clients and people that want to be his clients or should be his clients, whether he talked about the fact that there's a rush to get divorces finalized before the end of the year, because after this year, alimony payments or support payments are not tax deductible.
Well, support payments never were, right? Those are your kids.
Well, if they were your kids, spousal support.
It's not deductible to you. Is it still? So it's not income to her either.
Apparently not.
So they're treating you like you're still married. Why?
I don't know, but there was an article in the journal and some other stuff that I was following that talked about the fact that, you know, divorce support payments or spousal support, alimony payments, maintenance payments, whatever you want to call them, I think they're called maintenance in Illinois, were tax deductible up until this new bill passed. They put a grandfather clause in there to continue it for a year after the bill was signed, but as I understand it, as of December 31st, those payments are no longer tax deductible, which has accelerated the pace, as you might imagine, of some of these filings. And Illinois is the worst. I mean, divorce cases in Illinois can take a decade. There was that horrible case that Chicago Magazine wrote an article about a few years ago, about a guy I knew, in fact, whose divorce lingered and lingered and lingered and went back and forth to the Supreme Court and a bunch of other stuff. I suppose it's just a question of how contentious you want to make it, but if you want to make it contentious, that it can drag on and on and on.
What's the new deal where they recommend you get it? There's an attorney for the kids as well. What's that all about?
I'm familiar with the attorney's term is called a guardian ad litem. It's used in parental custody cases, and it's used in certain situations where the court believes that the parents are not acting in the best interest of the child, and therefore there are substantial, you know, the children's finances or financial future or substantial risk or something like that. And so you can appoint, the court will in some cases recommend or actually appoint. I did this when I was a student at Duke, will actually appoint a third party, not necessarily a lawyer, although it helps, to act as a guardian, a court's guardian, to support the interests of the child.
Okay, and what are they, so as the divorce progresses, what do they do, stand there and get paid?
Well, when I was doing it, it was volunteer, so I was working for low income litigants, and I was appointed by the court pro bono. If it's a lot of money involved, or they're wealthy parents, or parents who are able to support the cost, the court will set up whatever the fee rate is for that kind of work.
Okay.
You can get paid doing it. It's like being appointed an executor in a will. You can take a reasonable fee for whatever you're doing.
But the normally, if it's a regular divorce, the guy's paying both attorneys, right? So there's no.
We're actually more liberated now than we used to be. The attorneys, whoever's the principal breadwinner is actually paying the lawyers. But typically the attorneys are paid out of the marital estate. So both parties end up having to pay for it. But until you're divorced, both spousal incomes are considered marital assets. So they both go into the marital pot. And then the attorneys are paid out of that marital income pot, if you will. If the husband's the principal breadwinner, then the husband is paying the vast bulk of the majority of the fees. But it's quite possible that a wife, would be paying that. And if she's the principal breadwinner, we have to be careful. You know, we want to be politically correct here. We have to be careful about assigning gender roles to these positions.
I see. Well, the wife still has the baby, though, right?
Generally, yeah, that would be the way I would look at it, but not always. There's an absolutely crazy discussion, and if Jess wants to get on and look at Quillette or one of these other sources that I frequently cite in Twitter, there's a huge debate going on about gender identity and whether gender identity is whatever you say it is versus, you know, the actual sexual equipment you're born with. So there's a line of thought in academia, and it's rapidly gaining traction there, that if you're a guy but you want to identify as a woman or as something else, you know, a sperm whale,
yeah,
then that's what you are and that's what you should be called. I think it's incredibly crazy. I had somebody, one of my law partners, this actually came up in a discussion at a, we were all having coffee in a talking about this issue, what was going to happen if we had an associate who came in and said he wanted to be referred to as, or, you know, outwardly looking like a guy, but who said he wanted to be referred to as she or they. That's a thing.
I like that.
And this guy, this partner said, you know, I'm not sure I should be roped into supporting somebody's mental illness.
That's about the truth. Yeah, I mean,
not exactly the most sympathetic, but anyway.
But there's a lot of, won't spend too much time on this because all kinds of other stuff going on with Brexit and everything, but I actually was waiting for your buddy Greg the other night, and there's a couple other guys up at the club, and you know, a couple old white guys, typical, and one of them, for some reason, real nice guy, he somehow he'd gotten involved, and I didn't ask, I don't know if his son-in-law or somebody was no longer around or whatever, but he's more involved in the grandkids than maybe, you know, you would think somebody would be. In terms of lugging him to soccer and all this other kind of stuff, and which is fine. He, you know, he didn't seem like he didn't like it or anything. He was pretty much into it. And he was saying, I get this feeling that in today's world, they have no idea what it's like to be a guy. He says, these kids that are 4 and 5 that are like, you know, wrestling or roughhousing or something, or on the playground or running back and forth, he goes, that's just what male kids do, and they think that these kids are all need to be like drugged or something. He goes, what's the matter with these people? You know, these kids,
yeah.
I mean, he goes, anything that people used to do on the way home from recess, we'd be always in a snowball fight, we'd be doing something. He goes, now that's considered behavior that, like, you need to be drugged for. It's you're too energetic or something. I go, what are you talking about? You blow off steam, and you go back into class. That's how we managed to hang in there for a 2-hour afternoon class. Because that's not the way people look at it now. He says, the whole idea of being male is wrong. You know, playing football, playing those kinds of things. You're not supposed to do that stuff anymore.
That there's a great book by a woman named Christina Somers, S-O-M-E-R-S, and Jess can find this, called The War on Boys. And I absolutely agree with that, with her sentiments there. The idea that male, and again, this a lot of this starts in academia, but the idea that you know, male traits are things to be stamped out. So there's that book that Christina Somers wrote that's really quite good, talking about the move to suppress male behaviors and male outlooks. There's a fascinating science fiction novel by a guy named Richard Morgan, who is probably better known for his series Altered Carbon, but it's a book called 13, and it deals with a world in which all of these aggressive male traits have been, you know, suppressed and sort of bred out of humanity, and you know, government's realizing that, hey, you know, we need a certain level of what was referred to as toxic masculinity. We need a certain level of toxic masculinity in our certainly in our soldiers. So they retrograde and genetically alter a certain number of men with Neanderthal genes, so that those sort of classically male traits are very strong. And it's a story about what happens with those individuals. Anyway,
funny you should mention that, Lou.
I'm sorry?
Funny you should mention that, because one of my good buddies from the Fed, brilliant guy, nicest guy, was a policeman in Long Island, a lawyer, now he's an economist for the Fed, and he sat in front of Congress and answered questions for 4 hours on futures in front of the Agriculture Committee, did a great job. Anyway,
I'll bet he's got some interesting insights into human nature.
Yeah, well, but get a load of this. He goes and takes one of those genetic tests.
Yeah.
But there's more than one or two, but there's, if you take the ancestry one, like our friend Greg did, it'll come back and say, you know, you're Eastern European, you're this, that, and the other thing. They got rid of the part where you're Polish or you're this, right? Are they still?
Why?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's not politically correct. But he came back a reasonable chunk Jewish, which I guess they still keep pulling out. I don't know why that is. But so anyway, Robert takes the one the National Geographic gives you, which is a totally different animal. It's not. They show you this huge chart. I'm sure everybody somewhere along the line has seen one of these things. The first group out of Africa actually, I think, shoved up where the Eastern Europe is to Northern Europe, and then basically turned left. And then there's a group, you know, a few thousand years later that actually went south toward Italy and France and those places. So, and there's some that, you know, went someplace in Russia and crossed over to, you know, the Bering Sea. Or, you know. Anyway, there's all these ideas and how they got to Australia and everything. But everybody started out in Africa, according to this stuff. So the DNA thing is what group you are out of Africa, not where they ended up being Irish or Polish. And it's pretty fascinating, but evidently, all of us still have about 1.5% Neanderthal genes.
I've read that, and yeah, there was definitely crossbreeding between Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal peoples.
Well, Lou, everybody knows, some of those Neanderthal chicks were hot.
Okay, so now you've triggered, since we're free associating this morning.
Well, anyway, Robert comes back. He comes back as, instead of the normal 1.5, he's 2% Neanderthal. He goes, so Jeff, that explains a lot.
Just put a link up to a song called Trogdolites. Trogdoll.
Troglodytes.
Yes, it's too early for me here.
Troglodytes.
Troglodytes. About you know, cavemen and cave women. That came out about 30 years ago. Is that for associating? Yeah. Well, there was a report. There have been two reports that I found particularly fascinating, given you know, the description of how life started and how human life started in Genesis. But there was a recent report, and Jess may be able to find this, that would indicate that modern man, modern humankind, arose out of a perhaps one breeding female.
Yes.
There is that, and that was fairly recent. Earlier than that, maybe three or four years ago, there was another article that talked about how tenuous human life was on the planet during the last ice age, and that the human genetic stock may have come from as few as 25 breeding females. And I mean, either way, that's stunning. And either way, it's a fascinating sort of throwback to the way Genesis describes the origin of mankind. It's sort of interesting to try to imagine what life was like and what was going on in those human populations at that point, when you're down to one or less than 30 women who are able to actually bear offspring, and from that group comes what we have now.
Well, I'm not so sure that's it's one way of looking at it. I mean, probably the correct way, but evidently there's some way. And again, I read stuff I shouldn't read. You can't get squat from the males when it comes to genetics. I don't know why, but every female is kind of traceable back.
Yes.
And every female is basically traces back to one predecessor. But you're saying it's the Eve, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, that's the article that I read. Yeah. I read recently. It was pretty funny. Somebody tweeted that article out and said, you know, this is really, you know, fascinating and unprecedented. And then somebody else retweeted that and said, what, you've never read Genesis? You know, I mean, that's pretty noteworthy.
Well, I mean,
and so again,
it means that all the offshoots eventually didn't make it. It was really what.
Yeah. Well, and we've, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we are now starting to track through the fossil record. We are now starting to track genetic offshoots that have, you know, really run into genetic, what I would refer to as sort of genetic dead ends, where populations of, you know, humanoid offshoots from Neanderthal or Zinjanthropus or Australopithecus or some of these other early hominids, these offshoots have gone off and you know, developed in certain areas, fairly isolated in certain areas, and then eventually just died out. And it makes you wonder what made, you know, Cro-Magnon, the modern man, what made Cro-Magnon so special or lucky or whatever, that particular genetic strain survived, much like us.
What do you mean? He had Robert's parents living right over the hill.
Yeah, I mean that whole line is fascinating, and to take it full circle back to our earlier conversational topic, one of the things that jumps out of psychological data, and this is the stuff, by the way, that a significant portion of academia is trying to suppress. This kind of discussion, and popular culture is doing it now too. This is the James Damore case at Google, but popular culture is trying to suppress this idea that men have genetic characteristics that make them significantly different from women. Not just the physical characteristics, but things like behavior. And for example, one of the things that you see in a male population is wider distribution of intelligence. In other words, the smarter guys are smarter, the dumber guys are dumber. You see a wider range there than you do in female populations. You see wider ranges of you know, aberrant behavior, whatever. Men have genetically predisposed to do certain things, and I would have thought that people who have raised children and observed kids would have no doubt about that, just by watching children play together. But for whatever reason, Western culture, again, dominated in certain elements by this very, what I consider to be anti-male outlook, is trying to suppress that. And the literature, just can get on and find it. The literature is full of articles like this.
Well, why? Is the question. We've abdicated or what?
Well, I mean, part of it is because there is a total unwillingness, I think, on the part of a significant segment of the population, and I mean well-educated segment of the population, to accept the fact, for example, that women are going to make different choices apparently based on a genetic predisposition. And to use a popular example of a fallacy, the so-called wage gap, the 20 cent an hour difference between what men over the course of their working lives earn versus what women over the course of their working lives earn. And the idea that this is all due to prejudice and all due to bigotry, as opposed to it being due to women in a number of factors, but predominantly two things. Women's choices in career fields across the aggregate spectrum, across the aggregate total, are radically different than men's. They don't pick the same kinds of jobs. And this is true, again, fascinating stuff. If you look at, well, at least it is to me as an employment lawyer, sorry, but if you look at, for example, studies in places like Sweden or Norway, the Nordic countries, where you have almost total legal equality between the sexes in terms of things like parental leave and stuff like that, women have just as many choices as men do. In those societies, the wage gap and the choice of in terms of choice of careers is actually worse than it is in places where women's rights are suppressed. So you see significantly more women in places like Pakistan or other cultures where women there's a high level of misogyny within a culture. You see more science and technology, STEM graduates for women in those cultures than you do in places like Sweden or Norway or even the United States or Canada. Whatever's happening in terms of you know, giving people choices, those choices tend to fall out along fairly well-defined lines based on gender. And if you say that, you know, this is what got James Damore at Google fired.
Well, no, it's
he was noting these trends and saying, you know, we're trying to promote more women into our career field, and we're taking these anti-bigotry courses and this anti-bigotry training, but maybe it's a matter of women's choices. And if it is, that our training is not going to have any effect. He was fired for saying
that. All that thought, because I have a couple of things to opine. S&P futures up 2, Dow futures down 5, NASDAQ futures up 16. Mixed market, mixed and slow. Be right back.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom House. He's Jay-Z on the board. Lou Michaels with us. S&P Futures, everything's up now. S&P is up 250, Dow up 4, and NASDAQ up 20, so not much, but positive. We have the oil down 51 cents, 50.64. It's actually down like $2 from what we were talking about on the show yesterday. A 10-year yield, 2.89, so inching back towards 3. You know, today it's actually down 0.009. It's still moving back towards 3 over the last few days. DAX down 15.1%, quiet. FTSE down 30.4% as Theresa May won her conference vote yesterday, but still nobody was with her on this Brexit deal. CAC around down 18.4%. I can understand why they're not with her, by the way, but that's just me. Nikkei up 213, 1%. Shanghai up 31, 1.2%. Hang Seng up 337, 1.3%. As our president continues to say, as this deal's getting closer and closer,
Although, I don't know. Those guys now are they're accused of being hackers into the hotel chain, Marriott, over the weekend. So that's not good. So there's a lot of stuff going on with this. They say Brent down 52 cents. West Texas down 51. So the spread is exactly $8.99. So it's down a little bit. Gold retracing a little bit today, down 340. Silver down 5 cents. GZ, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 6:36. Chicago, make sure you prepare for some heavy rain this evening. I apologize. Showers start around 4 and increase heavily around 7. Today's high is 43, low of 31. Phoenix is clear and sunny. Today's high is 66 with a low of 42. Bulls and Suns both off last night. In hockey, the Blackhawks beat the Penguins, ending the game 6-3. And not much to report on the roads this morning, just one accident on the left shoulder of the Stevenson going north at Cicero, causing some delays. And Chief, make sure you finish that thought on the anti-bigotry guy who got fired, because sometimes you forget, and I'm curious.
But that was actually Lou, but what I'm saying is when I was in the business world, and you know, I still am, but I own my own place, so nobody ever got paid what they were, quote, worth. I mean, you got paid at the last job, right, Lou?
Yeah, I mean,
basically,
this idea of worth. Well, again, this goes back to what I consider to be a line of feminist scholarship that started in the 70s. That's the 1970s. That began to look at, you know, women's contributions economically to the, I won't say the marketplace because they weren't working in the marketplace, but women's economic contributions to the culture through things like housework and unpaid work and things like this. So the idea was that women are not being paid as much as men. And again, if you look at the studies on this, the women's choices, childbirth, other factors that are not related to discrimination or bigotry account for all but, you know, 4 or 5 cents an hour, maybe, in terms of what you can control for statistically. But that gap is still cited by lots of people who should know better as evidence that, you know, we have a long way to go. I want to just follow up with one last thought on this, because I know you want to talk about some other things. The ideas that are percolating in academia are working their way out into the culture much more rapidly than I think a lot of us notice. But one of the most pernicious is this concept of intersectionality. And you actually saw a U.S. senator, I believe it was Senator Warren, you know, embrace this concept. But intersectionality, if you're a business culture or a company, and you are making decisions, you publicly say, we are going to use this concept of intersectionality to you know, make our decisions in terms of promotion and hiring and firing and things like that, you are setting yourself up for an employment discrimination lawsuit. Because intersectionality expressly considers race, gender identity, things like this, gender preference, things like this, in analyzing who is entitled, I put that word in quotation marks, who is entitled to the benefits or should be entitled to the benefits of your economic, you know, your economic decisions. It's astounding to me to see people who I think, again, should know better, saying, look, we've got to make more decisions based on race, gender, and gender identity so that we're advantaging these disadvantaged groups. They are expressly considering things that our employment discrimination codes and laws say you may not consider in making decisions. And again, this is something that got this engineer at Google fired.
Well, I think the problem, or one of the problems, Lou, is that the people, elected officials and people in academia, have never really had a real job. I mean, a lot of them haven't. Not that academia is not a real job, it is, but I don't know how much different it is today, but because it's been a while since I've been in that marketplace. But when you got hired, they said, how much were you making where you were? And they added 10% on it, and if you wanted a new job, maybe 15% you went.
That is in the Ninth Circuit, which is the west coast of the United States, That is now expressly prohibited. You may not ask somebody what you made in the last job and base your compensation decision on that, because that, quote, perpetuates, unquote, discrimination that
it's the same question.
Women experience in the workplace.
But it's the same question as saying, what's it going to take for us to hire you? Most people, if you were to add, I would say most people, unless you're, you know, a massive egotist, are probably going to add, take what you're paying, making now, and add 15% to it. And that's the way people are. But what I'm saying is, okay.
Yeah, well, there's a recognition, that there's a myth or whatever, a belief that women don't do that, that women are much more modest and humble than men are, and that they will not ask for the actual value of their their own worth. And so we have to design economic systems, that is laws, that save them from themselves by making such questions illegal.
Well, but you have, I imagine, again, so I'm asking you, most companies have grades and pay ranges, right? And so if I'm a financial analyst at Pullman, which I was, and I'm in such and such, and all of a sudden I get, you know, promoted to senior financial analyst, and they're going to say, well, gee, we got a, you know, wage freeze on, but you're at the higher end of your range, and the lower end of the other range is like, maybe you're making 18, well, we got to give you a 19.5, but we don't have to do it till like next year. And they're not going to, the range for the next one might be 19.5 to 30. So you're in there for 2 weeks, and you go, okay, I'm in this group, and there's five other buffoons here that I'm doing twice the work of any of them. How is it they're all making 27? Well, they've been here. They've had a whole different path through the thing. You don't go in and demand 27 and get it, Lou, ever.
Yes,
you're male,
do.
Female. Well, okay, you can, but good luck to that.
Yeah, I mean this issue is if you have any government contracts. There's an office of the federal government called the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs. And if you are a government contractor, your decision-making on this stuff gets analyzed in a very simplistic way by people who, in my experience, have a very limited grasp of statistical sampling methods. But you're going to find exactly this kind of discussion. You know, why are you paying so-and-so this much? Well, they've only been in the job X, but they're doing, you know, they're doing the job of, you know, this person who's in a higher pay grade. Well, but they haven't been here long enough. We don't bump them up into that upper pay grade until a certain amount of time's passed. That's not good enough.
You know, you notice what you're talking about, Lou, when I'm talking about Jay-Z? Every single person, I know you're not big on saloons, Lou. There was a saloon in Indiana.
Are there still saloons?
Well,
nobody here talks about saloons. They talk about bars.
Whatever, same thing. Emporiums. And so there was a poster that said, just remember, everybody else in the world except you is overpaid. I mean, nobody ever walks in and says, I'm making 30. The five new guys you got are only making 27. Guess what? They're all working harder than I am. You should probably drop me from 30 to 27. When's that conversation ever been had?
I actually, just to give you an example, I've actually had those conversations with my leadership, and when I was, you know, when I was part of the leadership team here, I've actually had those conversations with attorneys who have come in and said, look, I have a pretty good idea what I'm, you know, what my value is here in terms of my billable work and all this, and I think this is a reasonable number. Well, we think we can give you more. Well, no, I think this is a reasonable number for right now.
Really?
I've had those conversations.
Wow. You're telling me attorneys are more honest than the rest of the world?
I don't know if they're more honest than the rest of the world, but I've had those conversations with attorneys who have who have said, look, you know, you guys, I'm not going to come in here and ask for more money because I can look at my numbers and I know exactly what I'm contributing here in terms of revenue, and this is how much I'm worth.
All right, so the baseball player says, you're paying me to hit 300, I hit 240. I suck. By the way, why don't you cut me $10 million next year? That's not going to happen, Lou.
It doesn't happen, or it happens very rarely, but you will see players. I mean, Tom Brady's one of them. I'm not a Tom Brady fan, but I give him kudos for this. Brady took a compensation cut so that they could that the Patriots could bring in some more, you know, some more people.
Did he really?
Well, he took a compensation cut in terms of immediate payout.
Right.
And again, those NFL contracts aren't guaranteed. So deferring compensation, you know, is effectively a pay cut.
Okay. So he did
But I've heard of, I'm aware of.
All right, Lou, we got to go to break, buddy.
You did the same
SP thing. Futures down 3, Dow Futures down 4, NASDAQ Futures up 15, so we're still mixed and slow. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Lou Michaels. SP Futures up 2, Dow Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures up 20, so we got a mix of positive open. We were down a little, we were up last night, then we were down this morning, so we're kind of all over back and forth here a little bit. Lou, there's a nice article, I don't know if it's nice or not, but article regarding the Trump tax cuts. And now, of course, they're not doing anything like anybody thought they were, except lower taxes to corporations, which in some ways I think was a good idea. But the idea that it was going to create all this, you know, the market was going to take off like a rocket ship, and you had people on TV, essentially, that are now chairman of the Economic Commission. I'm not saying Larry Kudlow The greatest thing in the world for middle class people is a corporate tax cut. And now the guy's got a position of power, Lou. Is that a problem with you? It is with me.
You know, I'm sure you remember, I believe it was in the 1950s when the chairman of General Motors said, what's good for General Motors is good for America, and what's good for America is good for General Motors.
When people actually believe that, you know, that's the weird part.
Oh, I know. I know. That was why I referenced the quote, because I thought that sort of ties in with what Mr. Kudlow, you know, has said. The thing I find fascinating is that even with the increased tax revenue, and we're collecting more taxes now than we have in maybe forever.
Corporate taxes are down. Personal taxes are up 6%, according to this article.
I just look at the total that the IRS had pulled in last year,
right.
And my recollection was it was a gigantic number, more than that had been collected in some time, even adjusting for inflation. But the point is that we cannot stop spending, and it doesn't matter how much tax revenue we're getting if we continue to fritter it away on things like, you know, what was the agriculture bill that just kicked out? $860 billion?
See, that's the problem that you have. If you're getting it, it's not frittering.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. I mean, you look at that. I just saw a report that Louisiana did a quick audit of 100 Medicare, Medicaid cases and found that of the audits of 100 people who were receiving those benefits, only 18 were actually qualified, and that some of the people receiving those benefits had incomes of you know, more than $200,000. I mean, this goes back to something that I consider to be a fundamental truth. When you are dealing with other people's money, and there had better be an accountability mechanism in place that is brutal.
There isn't.
Because
there's none.
Because nobody cares.
There's absolutely none. You're talking about
we don't have one. That's why. So the waste that's pumped out of this. I mean, and I don't know any other way to deal with it other than to simply say we're going to start cutting budgets, and we're going to force you to go through and start doing the kinds of checks that you ought to be doing anyway. There are some things I actually like about the old Soviet Union, and one of them was if they caught you doing this with you know, the public's money, if they caught you engaged in official fraud, if you were one of the low level types, you know, that was a state crime. They took you out and you went into the gulag, or they executed you.
Which was worse?
This is the kind of thing that just drives me absolutely nuts. We spend, and you know, the president said he's not going to sign another budget like this. I hope he's right. But there is absolutely, by either party, by any elected politician, there is no discipline, no financial discipline, no sense of financial concern about how we're spending this money. All we're doing is just looking at the tax trough as this unending source of wealth that we can throw at burgeoning entitlement programs, that we can waste whenever we want to, and it's going to bite us.
Well, we have a
and you've been saying that since I've been on the show.
Well, it's absolutely right. I mean, I don't... City of Chicago, Lou, we have this pension issue here that somehow has to be stopped, but...
But that's the direction we're all headed in.
Right.
Because the entitlements are Social Security, Medicare. Without accountability in those systems, we are going to eat up almost all of our budget just in payments basis alone.
It doesn't stop there. It's agriculture. It's the city of Chicago now wants to put I thought somebody told me last night, a 30-cent tax on gasoline. The gasoline in the city of Chicago right now is probably 80 cents to a dollar higher in the suburbs. So instead of coming down on people and saying, wait a minute, what is the monopoly in the city here? What's going on? Why are you guys charging so much? Location helps some, but you can go to New York City and it's not that much higher than it is in the burbs of New York. A little bit more, but...
It's a function of financial mismanagement, and this is what got Macron in trouble in France. He ratcheted up the gas tax. Now, Macron did it for a stupid reason. I mean, not even a logical reason. They did it to virtue signal about climate emissions.
Yeah.
In a country that produces 90% of its electricity by nuclear power, so it's got very low emissions anyway. But Macron ratchets up this gas tax. That's why they're burning cars at the Arc de Triomphe.
Well, everybody's always trying to tell other people how to spend their money, and they're going to. That's what I don't. We had this argument on Friday, Lou, and of course I was losing it because we have some people that were. We're talking about, and again, it ties into our stuff earlier. We were mentioning a little bit about, you know, the pregnancy leave and so forth. I don't have a problem with helping out anybody who had a kid. I realize you don't want your worker there 2 days after they had a baby. They're going to be worried about the baby and not working. I get all that, and I would be very generous, I think. But the idea of somebody who never had a job, never owned a company, telling me how long that should be, I don't think that's their job. Do you?
No, but again, this is part of, and I make this point as an employment lawyer, the vast majority of changes we have seen in the American workplace result directly from the large influx of women that started coming into the workforce as a result of birth control and other contraceptive developments. Once women could control, you know, when they were having children, we started seeing this massive influx of women into the workplace in the 1970s and the 1980s. And most of our workplace changes in terms of our laws have reflected that. The workplace culture has been contorted to make it easier for women to work in terms of the Family Medical Leave Act, in terms of the Americans with Disabilities Act, in terms of our sexual harassment laws and sexual discrimination laws. All of this reflects an increasing feminization of the workforce, of the workplace, and a push to make it more friendly or friendlier or less aggressive, less difficult for women to work there. And, I mean, whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, I mean, the idea that it's my company, I ought to be able to control it, that idea is rapidly going by the wayside. And again, you will see this in the stuff coming out of academia. What we're getting is kind of a soft Marxism, which says that the workers, you know, own the product of their labor. And
well,
that's the entitlement that should be there.
You could be,
and that the companies that are providing an outlet for that are simply supposed to step back and you know, disgorge their profits.
If you were sneakier on the economic competitive side, you would say that if you have a company that has 500 employees, half of which are women, you know, 10 of which have had a baby any given time, you can absorb that. But the way, if you can force it down the chain to the guy down the block who only has two women or if they're out at the same time, he's got to hire two more people, competitively, that's a huge advantage for you.
Right.
And obviously,
right.
If you're in government, nobody cares. If you're in government, give somebody 5 years off. What's the difference? It's not your dough.
They do, in fact.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, well, not about 5 years, but all of a sudden you're, now you're saying, well, if somebody in government can take, you know, 8 weeks off when they have a baby, or 12 or 15 or whatever it is, half a year, why shouldn't somebody else get it? So they'll pass a law. People market their political skills. If I'm in office, I'll make your boss pay you for not being there. Well, that's pretty interesting, Lou. It's not the way it ought to be, bud.
Well, no, but that's what confronts especially small business owners.
Right.
And this is, again, goes back to one of our themes. The rise of the regulatory state. The idea that the more regulations you impose a significant cost, and the people that are best positioned to take on that cost are your large companies, large corporations that can handle the compliance obligations.
And to think that they don't know that, Lou, is very naive. They know it very well.
Oh, I absolutely think so. I mean, large scale organizations are much less concerned about those kinds of things and will push for those kinds of things because it's an easy way to virtue signal, as opposed to, you know, the mom and pop operation with that what Family Medical Leave Act kicks in at 50 employees. If you've got, you know, I know clients who freeze their hiring at 45 or 46 so that they don't fall under the FMLA obligations because they can't manage it. It's very much like what you saw with Obamacare, with the magic number of you know, people working more than what was it, 30 hours a week, and cutting, you know, cutting staffing so that, or cutting staff hours, hiring a few more people, but cutting staff hours so they didn't put people over that threshold and would fall
well,
under
if you're
coverage of the statute.
If you're Paramount Dentist, then you welcome it because it becomes an increased cost. You go down state and you get a rate hike because of it. Lou, take care of yourself, bud. SP Futures up 175, Dow Futures down 5. Be right back, Mr. Farihamzi.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here. What
what it is.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. She's Jay-Z on the board. We have Safari Hamzy from Hamzy Analytics.
Good morning.
S&P futures up a whole 275. Dow futures up 3.
I can't hear you. Did you move to China?
No, we didn't move to China. Did you?
Are they going to take you? No. As a hostage.
I'm not so sure they would let you in China. As ECB announced the end of crisis era stimulus, switches to reinvestments, bond purchases fall from 15 billion euros a month to zero. Far the end of an era, they say.
Is that a question for me?
I mean, that's how did we ever do what those guys did? Is that what happens if you have one of these negative bonds and these guys are going to stop buying them from you? Now what?
Is that a question for me?
Well, you're the only man here besides me.
I can hardly hear you. I heard something about bonds. You got to speak up, young man.
I'm having a little throat problem. Hey, the question is...
Yes, sir. Much better.
If you have a zero... Let's put it this way, a negative interest rate bond,
right,
and Draghi's going to be stop buying them from you, I think you're screwed.
Well, if you invest in Europe, you're screwed, period.
Because I don't see you or me...
That's what Macron came to change, and they're stopping Macron now.
I don't see you or me buying that bond from him at a zero interest rate, do you?
Yeah. Listen, the only way to go is long and short NQ futures. Rest is for kids.
You know what? You
got 300 points, 250, 300 handles a day.
Yep.
It's volatility heaven. As F. Scott Fitzgerald wrote at Cottage, it's this side of paradise.
Well, it's... look at
and he wrote that in 1917. Think about that concept. A year before the big one finished.
What about the stocks that are the proxies? Boeing? You never would have thought Boeing would be the proxy, huh? Boeing, Goldman Sachs, Caterpillar. Those are all you got to trade now.
Well, we'll see. I'm worried about all those guys long term, but we'll see how things go now.
What do you make of...
Well, let's see how things happen with the President Pence and how he puts away the trade wars.
What do you,
I mean, if he does that, then we'll really rally.
What do you think...
And these are what caretaker governments usually do. Don't forget. History is a guide.
What's going to be the catalyst to get the president out, in your opinion?
But he'll resign. Bannon. Bannon was right. He don't like the lack of respect and popularity and all that, because he's done such great things. Remember, we've had the greatest economy that he built.
Yeah.
He's his own cocoon. He has no clue, as Pearson said, and others have said it, or Mattis disregarded some of his crazy orders. Those guys have spoken. 44 former senators have spoken. Mueller is beginning to speak. You got SDNY. You got the Eastern District of Washington. Yeah, it's called distributed processing by Mueller. And then now you got the new, Barbara Underwood, which was a deputy AG for the country, became the New York AG. Well, she's, I think, this is her end of the term. The new one coming in saying, we got a bunch of things we're going to look at. The family, the foundation, the org. All they need to do is a couple of RICOs. By the way, I did a present value calculation for those of you interested. If you look at the present value of what Daddy gave, the not the loan of $1 million, but it looks like it's around 225 to 240 he transferred to them. If the time value of the money now is about 414. We use a 3.22 inflation rate that is compounded for the last 19 years. You can research that. That just comes about 3.22. Now remember, if without penalties, just interest, if IRS finds that illegal, or you broke some tax laws, they charge you around 0.5% a month, so 6% a year. It's about twice the rate of inflation. IRS is not dumb. So you can't pay them with cheaper dollars. They won't let you. If you do that, then reverse that back, again, without penalties, just the interest expense alone is $680 million. I don't think he's got any building left at that value. Remember, he's a licensing guy. Nobody will lend to him other than Deutsche Bank. Nobody has lent to U.S. Bank for years now, after the fiascos on the casinos and DJT. So I think they're going to liquidation. Now, this is before any criminal penalties, terrible damages, late fees and all that. If those hit, and the best thing you can do to a rich guy is not to put him in an orange jumpsuit. Just take his money away.
Farrah, do you think any of these guys that are, well, there are some people in that, I mean, the kids, the son-in-law's father, that any of these guys, if you ever give a hard look to any of these guys, would any of them stand up?
Any of them do what?
Would any of them stand up if you gave them a real hard look in regards to...
I don't know. Let's talk about facts.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to be Bear Bart and Fox and all that. They just take something and run with it. Interesting enough, last night, or was it yesterday? Was it last night, the night before? Ingram is having issues now. He says, what wall? And then there was the other guy, now, Judge Napoliano said something about he's going to be indicted. When Fox says you're in trouble, you know what that means?
You're in trouble.
There's a word for it. Ladies, plug your ears. There's a word for it in Latin. You know what that is?
No.
No Vaselino.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Plug your ears. I warned, plug your ears.
Yep.
Because we don't have, sensors. So, he's in deeper trouble than he likes to admit, but that's part of his bluffing. That's why he's bluster. That's how he's a poker player. Except I say, as a casino guy, he was a terrible manager. He hasn't really managed anything good. If you really go back and take a look at it, there was a guy from Bloomberg who was giving advice. I mean, some analysis on him. The only thing he managed well was the lies. Up to now, and then the House of Cards at one point, you just have too many cards up. I don't understand why people lie. My grandma, when I was being racist, listen, if I catch you lying, it's capital punishment with me. I'll never talk to you again. You don't want your grandma, your Persian grandma saying that to you, because you're done.
No, you're done.
You're done for life. And so I learned a long time ago, start living with the pain, but don't lie. If something is wrong, it's better take the pain than lie, because one day he's going to catch up with you big time.
All right, what happens, I mean, is me never doing one of these investigations, and I think...
He did what?
I said, for me, never being a part of one of these things. I mean, you and Lou and the rest of the people here know more about this than me, so...
No, I mean, listen, I don't know anything about any of this, but I know I read.
Okay.
I read, and also there are programs I watch daily just to see what the analysis is. And here's the issue. They tell me, oh, it's a bias. What bias? It can't be all lying? These are career people. Look at the filing. The filings, for example, with the last night with... McCord.
Yeah.
He's a career SDNY. The top is picked by him. The SDNY shop itself is run by Trump appointee, but these are all career people. They're not going to put their reputation at risk. All the schooling and law school and all that at risk, and all their careers were saying something wrong or not analyzing it enough. And look at most of them, so cautious. Something you ask them, they don't know. They say, we don't know. We have to look into that. But you read the lines in detail. Listen, I believe whatever your politics are, you're better off listening to the other side.
Oh, sure.
You make peace with your enemies, friends.
You don't.
If I'm a Republican, I want to see what CNN is saying. I want to see what MSNBC is saying. If I'm a Democrat, I want to watch what Fox is saying. You want to watch what the other guy is saying to see what their ammo looks like. If you look at these and you analyze them, yeah, I throw in there. I mean, I stop Hannity, but at least I watch Ingram here and there. The only problem I have with both of these characters is that they can't even get ad money. What does it tell you? Remember, these are publicly held companies. They have to report. If you read the lines carefully in their SEC filings, they're having trouble getting advertisement money. That means what? Viewership is dropping.
I will ask you this and make a statement at the same time, Farrah. Is it?
Oh, there you go.
The thing that I think concerns a lot of people in the Trump case, especially if you're a Trumpkin.
Yes. Central.
And I, you know what?
In Florida.
I agree totally with these people in one regard, in the sense that it appears that our law enforcement in this country is incredibly discretionary. I'm sure it is in most countries, but it shouldn't be that way here. I'm not going to debate one of these guys if he says to me, if you train that same light on Hillary, you'd find a bunch of crap there, too. Because you know what?
Oh,
they're right.
they're probably right.
Yeah.
I'm not questioning that. One wrong doesn't make the other wrong.
No, no, I understand. I'm with you.
It's just, listen, we somewhere in there, you know, remember, again, I like to believe, okay? And that's a tough one. The answer is a tough one. I like to believe that Comey is clean, okay? I like to believe that Peter Strzok guy wrote his speech that was aired on July 5th, I think it was, 2016, which I was stunned. That was coming up, and he smacked me. Okay, well, I was on vacation. I'm in Denver with some tall blonde hiking. Guy comes and says, we find nothing wrong with Hillary. You know, that's talk about no Vaselino. Okay, what? I can't believe this. Now, it turns out later, a couple of keywords were changed by, I don't know his last name, Strzok, whatever it's called, Peter Strzok, the same guy who was doing texting with his girlfriend, lawyer, on the staff, which Mueller, the moment he found out, he fired. And it's the same guy, by the way, that Comey sent in. Of course, at that time, he didn't know these texts. To interview Flynn, General Flynn. I do believe Flynn was not clean. That I know. But, I mean, facts have come out. But they didn't tell him that implications of not being straight with him. Now, I would think, I do agree at the same time with the prosecutors that somebody like Flynn, you know, one of the highest intelligence officers we've ever produced in this country, how he changed intelligence. He tracked down, he was with McChrystal, then he got Saddam. He was the mastermind of how they pinpointed some areas or eliminated of what they should be after, which finally led to CIA getting Osama bin Laden, of that brilliance, okay? And also how you embed in a tactical way your intelligence people within a war zone with their ground commanders. This stuff is never done before, okay? Somebody with that intelligence wouldn't know lying is wrong, A, and then illegal to a government agency, especially FBI, and you're sitting in the White House and asking a question, talking about Russia, and you try to spin it? I know, I think that, I'm very digressing, but to me, Gerald Flynn was wrong there. But it was also Strzok who went there and asked that.
What I'm saying about the Comey thing, I'm going to hope he's clean too, but he's compromised.
I'm saying
the decisions made every single day by these guys. We got a country that's got 40 billion laws.
Yeah.
And everybody gets to enforce the ones they feel like.
Yeah, that's not good.
My concern about the Chicago situation.
If that wasn't true, then you wouldn't have Black Lives Matter coming up. You know, so,
well,
yeah,
that's right.
There's a concept of unclean hands in the law. You see that around, especially in criminal law, and that's sad.
Well, I mean, I'm convinced the Blagojevich situation was way over the top. It was a U.S. attorney wanting to make a name for himself, but I'm saying that now. But even Mueller, he comes to Chicago. Like I said, this 3 days in a row. The minute I heard Cohen was involved in the medallions in Chicago with the Russians, mm-hmm. I knew they had him for it. I knew they had him because it had to be dirty. Now, Cohen's got to be, how many medallions did he have? 5, 10, 20 maybe?
No.
I mean.
No. But he was involved with that other guy Chicago that.
My point is.
Quite a bet. And who knows? And I think that was the canary first.
Okay,
they
so.
They got him first. And then Cohen was in a corner. He's not just going to lose everything. You're looking maybe 15 years in jail, and then you're going to wake up and say, I'm going to talk. I think the biggest mistake he did was talk selectively. Again, now show you the intelligence. That's how you do it with Flynn. You walk over and say, I'm yours. You're going to get all or nothing.
Well, my point is, Farid, there's a lot, I think, you know, I'm guessing, there's a lot of people of various areas involved in the Chicago taxi thing, because there's been some massive swings of who owns these things in the last 20 years, and how this all went down.
Wasn't that also the Russian guy?
Well, yeah, what's my point? I'm trying to lay off the Russian stuff.
The Polish guy? It was some Eastern European.
No,
From what
I understand, the Russians own a lot of it, but my point is, Comey's not the only crooked one in there, so now his isn't the only name they found. Now they leave the other guys go because they like them. They're going to come back and find them. They're not going to find them. I mean,
well,
I mean, who makes these calls?
Banks. right?
And who makes these calls?
Well, nothing with the banks. Are you telling me? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, what's his name? Jamie Dimon is maybe he's a good guy. Okay, let's assume he is for a moment. But how about the rest of these guys? How about the guys at Morgan, the guys at Goldman? I mean, come on. Look what they did with AIG. And then the Abacus and all that. But we touched nobody.
No, that's right.
I mean, if we touched somebody who was little, teeny weeny nobody in Arkansas type of deal. But of the guys who ran the short, the long and short end of it on the subprime, or the ones who created or embedded in the subprime CDOs, which really caused this thing to fall over.
Oh, sure, sure.
None of them were touched. I was watching Big Short again.
Well,
again, Gil Caffrey, which Sam Eisen worked for. And now I understand. I've never talked to Gil in detail. He's a classmate of mine. I've never talked to him in detail. But I know now, it just hit me one more time. That's why he left Morgan. Remember, they bought Front Point from him in 2006 for like, I don't know, $400 million. And he became vice chair of Morgan Stanley Investment Management. So at that time, he was responsible for about $500 billion of money management. Okay? Big boat, you ride very slow and so forth. What he wasn't told until later, much, much later, when this investment, the short investment came to fruition, by this regional CEO of Morgan Stanley New York was, we hold the other side of the bag. So the bet he put on was against Morgan Stanley itself. He finds out later. You know, they hold about $15 billion.
There's something even more sinister in there.
So that's why he left. I mean, he just, I think he probably got sick to the stomach. Remember, Morgan Stanley is a scion of, the Bulge Bracket, White Shoe Investment Bank. All the Princeton guys went work there. Okay? And he almost took him down, not intentionally and not even knowing that was the other side of a trade. That these things are protected. But the stock went to six. And he left.
Right,
he's going back to Tiger, and that's where he's since.
Look at the difference in how the fraud was perpetrated. And it's always the same way. You get yourself in an area where there's no independent valuation.
But let's be clear here. We're not talking about Front Point. It has nothing to do with Gill and Front Point.
No.
Those guys just put a bet on. The fraud was done by the guys who were creating the CDOs.
There's two different types. The collateralized debt obligation, that's the insurance side. But the stuff you're talking about with AIG was a credit default swap.
Right.
Okay. Those are very different.
Right, they are. Absolutely different. I agree. But those CDOs, the way the fraud was perpetuated was with lack of agency rating, improper agency rating, correct? They put all of these together and said, this is A-plus crunch. Don't worry about it.
All right. Farrah, think of it as, and I'm not, I can't give you the whole formula, but think of it as life insurance. All right?
Yeah.
I'm going to sell my life insurance to Farrah Hamzy. I'm going to say he's in good health. We'll have to check him out. I have to make him bend over. Make sure he's in good health. So you say you're in good health. You're going to live to the actuarially. You're going to make it to 90. So for $1 million policy, I'm going to charge you $75,000 today, or $80,000, or some number. Then I'm going to go to one of my quant guys, and he'll say, with his health, it should be $87,050. Okay. I can't take that to income today. I have to put that in some kind of a formula where every year that you live and we make money, I get to take a little bit of money income into my life insurance firm.
Right.
Okay, there's ways to do
this. Liability part, yes.
Yeah, but now when I sell a credit default swap and somebody buys a bond in Italy and I sell them insurance on the bond, now first of all, I've got no damn business insuring the entire country of Italy, even if I am Goldman Sachs or AIG, but I'll sell you insurance on that thing you buy $40 billion worth of stuff. $2 million, I'll insure that bond because you're getting 10% over there versus 4% here. Okay, that's what guys did. But they didn't say,
They but went, you have to put some collateral over it.
Well,
nobody
came and
asked AIG to say, hey,
it's worse
how
than
much
that.
Of these you have sold?
No, Fari,
remember, they were unlisted. They were over the counter.
Fari, it's worse than that because it's not like IBM. I bought it at 160. I think it's worth 200. Yeah, but it's only trading 160. You can't take the profit yet. These guys took the. They said we sold it to this dopo Fari for $4 million. Our quants tell me it's only worth $2 million. We're going to take $2 million to profit today. And by the way, $1 million of that's my bonus.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. That's what happened.
AFP division.
Yeah.
In London. Which they quietly closed it and left. That was the AIG FP division. I forget who was running it by. And all they found afterwards was a little address in New Jersey. Okay? Those guys sold same CDSs to multiple people. The reason is because it was over the counter. You basically keep the contracts. I had a guy from, what do you call it? Remember Marco Esposito, Admiral.
Yes.
We had a talk one day. It was like July. Came over, we went upstairs, we had a beer, he doesn't drink, so he had Diet Coke, and he goes, hey, my problem with all of this is July, August of 2008. He goes, you know what the problem with all of this is? Because I was beginning to get short. I said, listen, I don't think a long end is working. Let's switch from our, and you guys were trading for us. You were trading auto trade. I said, let's switch from call spread into put spread slowly, especially with the banks. He goes, hey, the problem I have with all of this is not what you're doing. It's just that the things that you and I don't know, I said, like, to know what? He goes, this is over-counter CDSs that it could, if they finally get to it, it's going to stick to hell, not just Chicago, not just New York, the whole country. And I said, well, what are we talking about? He goes, could be 60 to 70 trillion. I said, you mean billion?
No,
I'm talking to you. Listen, trillion with a T. And I had a cold sweat.
Fari, AIG had written mortgage insurance on 40% of the homes in California. They think they were big enough to insure an entire state, for God's sake?
Yeah.
And who's on the board of that
nobody,
place?
Remember, they were so big, nobody dared to ask him. Hey. It's like long-term capital. You know, when long-term capital went and put that phony balance sheet in front of these big banks, and they wanted 100-to-1 leverage, did anybody tell Meriwether or Myron Scholes, you can't have this money? They were so eager to lend them. They even bought out the early tranches because these geniuses thought they got a corner on this Black-Scholes model as applied by their analysis on the Russian bonds. Why would we share with some investors? Let's take the early investors out using borrowed money. That's why the whole thing collapsed. But at the time the money was being lent to them, nobody questioned John Meriwether. He was master of universe. He and John Goodfriend ran Sully. If they didn't make a market in your bond, you were not in a bond market. They were shaking their knees, and they were signing papers, giving his money away at very low cost, and you know they were like basically borrowing at treasury rate, and the whole thing collapsed.
But it all comes down to if they're...
Well, by the way, we're going to repeat this.
Well, sure.
The thing is going to keep on repeating. If, no different than the tulips. So.
Because how people are.
Yes, exactly. At the extreme... Especially in the well-established, you know, preppy world, whatever, or WASP world, most likely a lot of this will happen. Did people look the other way? He's a good guy. He went to go to school. Let's do it.
Everybody likes somebody with an angle. And if you want to be a...
That's why I hang out with you.
Well, if you want somebody, you know, if you want to be a real bleep, you can say with Bernie Madoff. I mean, how many people Bernie's...
Well, that was another one. He ran NASDAQ. Who would dare question somebody who ran NASDAQ? You know, the vice chair or whatever of NASDAQ, who would dare that he could be wrong by any
Bernie's, time? Bernie's
what, did got... Did they hit six or seven?
Yeah, Bernie's got an angle.
All of them said...
Fari,
no,
we
got
to
okay.
go, buddy. Bernie's got an angle. He's got a chump somewhere. Yeah. The chump turned out to be them.
Strike conversion, remember?
Yep, SP Futures up 8.
One little thing, as Mary Thompson said on the night they got him.
Yep.
He says, look at what Hamzy Analytics is. This is on the air. Hamzy Analytics is doing on put call ratios for OEX. If you do the math, you'll see.
All right, Fari, we got to talk about it next week. We got to go. We'll talk about it next week. We'll be back in a second. Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ashi. Jay-Z. Jessica Zalewski on the board. S&P Futures up 8 now. Dow Futures up 40. NASDAQ Futures up 38. Over in Europe, we've got pretty much rallies bouncing. We started out way high yesterday and basically sold into the close, which we've been doing, fading every day. Today, DAX up 35, not as much as earlier. 0.3%. FTSE up 37 cents. Call that flat. CAC around up 6 bucks. Call that flat. So not much going on there. We're still bouncing over in Asia. We're there in the, they're in the belief that we're, I guess, turning at least toward the positive in this trade war deal. I'm not so sure they're right, but we'll see. Hopefully they are. Nikkei up 213, that's up 4%. Shanghai up 31, 1.2%. Hang Seng up 337, 1.3%. We have West Texas down 39 cents, now coming back a little bit. 50.76. We got Brent down 28 cents, so that spread is $9 and 11 cents. We've got gold only down 260, it was down 340 earlier.
So we're down 8 cents. They've been, gold's been in this 1250 range. You know, it's a lot higher than it was at 1190. So doing better, but not still not as high as I would like it. Jay-Z, what do you have for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 7:35. Chicago, make sure you prepare for some heavy rain later this evening. Showers start at 4, increase around 7. Today's high is 43, low of 31. Phoenix is clear and sunny today. Today's high is 66 with a low of 42. Bulls and Suns both off last night, and Blackhawks beat the Penguins, ending the game 6-3. In traffic, we've got a stall in the left center lane on the Kennedy going west at Montrose. Another accident on the Kennedy going west at North Ave between a car and a semi, causing significant delays. Nothing else to report back to you.
We have David with us.
I'm here.
David, how are you, buddy?
Doing fine.
The ECB announcement this morning, no more quantitative easing. I guess that's on schedule, right? That's not a major announcement?
No.
So those, what are you going to do with those negative interest bonds now that Draghi's not going to buy them from you?
Don't know. Never knew to begin with. Why would I know now?
Don't try and peddle them off on us, for God's sake.
Maybe Japan will buy them. They like to buy anything.
They'll buy anything, yeah, as long as it keeps the thing going. What a, in the on-again, off-again world of the Chinese situation, and now the latest is they think the hack and the Starwood came from China as well, Marriott Starwood Group.
Yes.
Don't these people have a life? I mean...
They get paid, I'm sure.
When I was
it's
on
state sponsored, these aren't amateurs.
When I was on the board of the CBOE, this is back in the '92 to '98, so a while ago. Somehow, David, I was the board member. It was one of those things. And anybody want to volunteer, and I didn't step back quick enough, type of thing. I was the volunteer board member on the double secret hacking committee. There's like five people in there. Couple of guys, couple of ladies, and that knew all about this stuff, and then there was me, that knew nothing about anything, you know.
And even the people who knew everything about it, they didn't know this kind of depth.
That's about to say. In those days, the hacking was very real, because the CBOE decided to allow people to get quotes on their website. They refused to put the quotes on the website themselves. Because they were afraid you could maybe hack up the chain and get into mainframe. So they actually bought quotes from an outside vendor to put on a website. So they would sell them to a third party and then essentially buy them back. Well, I mean, I think it made sense. It sounded like it made sense to me. Because anybody can walk up to the mainframe. And, they would average, at that time, we're talking 1998, 7-10 really serious hacks. Like a month, they'll get anywhere. They'll get into David's computer. They come in mine. There's nothing here. But if they get into the CBOE, and you hack around and you try and work your way up the chain, and you like give it an hour, and if it doesn't work, you say screw it and you go to the next place. So it was this constant. Everybody would get the initial invasion, or for lack of a better term, and then the invasion would see how far it would go. The CBOE had pretty good stuff, so, you know, somewhere along the line, they'd block it. Then the thing would get blocked and frustrated and say, the hell with it, and they'll go to the next place. But it's the classic, the reason why you lock your car is not to keep it from getting stolen, necessarily. It's to make sure that the other guy's car next to it isn't locked, gets stolen before yours. Right? It really was, but long story short, too late on this one. Virtually all of them were from Sweden, Denmark, Sweden. They were individual guys just loving to do it. Or ladies. And now I don't think there was, maybe these guys just didn't know that it was a Swedish government, I don't know, but I'm going to say it was a different level like you're talking about. And now
it appears it was Russian infiltration.
Some Russians praying some Swedish dudes, maybe. I don't know. I'm saying their thought was it looks to us like it's coming from Sweden. It's probably some people over there just testing to see how good they are and, you know, need a life type of thing. Or it's, you know, it's dark all day in the wintertime. It's what they do. I don't know. But that was, I'm saying at that time, the level was seemingly from individuals, maybe from university students testing to see how good they are, whatever it is. But now it seems a lot more organized and sinister, it appears, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. I mean, and that's how all these businesses, have sprung up, the FireEyes, the Fortinets, the PANWs, huge. You know, and I mean, Cisco Systems has their own, Microsoft has their own security. I mean, it's very competitive, and huge businesses have built up, and this level of sophistication has gotten beyond, I guess, beyond everybody, and they're just working hard all the time. You know, and preventative means not just, you know, to respond to ransomware and that kind of thing.
Well, what, I'm certainly not one of these, we've had a few on the show, you know, true, what do you want to call them? Non-entrepreneurs.
Mavens.
No, well, we have some of those. What's the third party is the, what party? The true libertarians that, since we obviously hack other people, I have no problem with them hacking us because it's not like we're innocent in this game.
And no, I mean, I mean, 20 years ago, I had a guy who I used for just computer repair and software updates and whatever. And I mean, he became really hard to get hold of. And he said that he was literally training himself to be a professional hacker, not because he wanted to commit any kind of espionage or, you know, do whatever, but to literally hire himself out to the U.S. government to prevent hacking.
Well,
so,
and
this sprouted up, that was 20 years ago.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It becomes in the eye of the beholder. You know, we build tanks, and again, I'm an American through and through, so I get it, and I still believe our side most of the time. You know, a tank for us is...
Except the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Yeah, well, isn't it true that a tank for us is defense?
Right.
A tank for, you know, the Iranians or the Russians is an offensive threat, right? Our tank's different because we're different. Okay, fine, I get that, but in the eyes of other people, maybe we're not, you know, type of thing. And I'm going to say that, you know, I don't know, if we're never going to find this out, but... Do you think we spend as much time hacking around in China as they do here? I'm guessing we probably do.
I don't know. I have no idea. If I had to guess, I would guess that whatever, you know, intelligence that we're trying to gather, yes, I'm sure we're very involved in China, but I think that our, you know, real scare and whatever and enthusiasm for finding out what's going on behind the scenes is still oriented towards Russia.
I would agree. But a lot of the stuff that I don't understand, David. You know, the funny part, the more I do the show, the more I have intelligent people, and the more I actually learn, the more I realize I don't understand. It's a losing game.
Well, we're learning all the time.
I know, but the more you realize you don't know.
I mean, Kramer has all these guys from FireEye, from Fortinet, from Pacific, from Cisco, and I mean, it's just... It's just like daily education, and they're the pros of the pro.
Well, it's at some point you wonder, though. I went to this, ethanol plant. They make, you know, ethanol from corn, and essentially it's massive still, for lack of a better term. You know, you could actually drink the product if you wanted, David. You have a big headache, but it wouldn't kill you. You might feel like you were dead for a while, but there's like one more thing they do to pull impurities out to make it like more drinkable. Anyway, but the thing is this massive, you know, system in there. I mean, there's nobody running around turning knobs, you know, to open up this vent or that vent or this line, that line. The computer's doing everything. The guy says to me, we're never going to have any hacking problems. And I go, why is that? And he goes, because you can't access this any place but here. He goes, we don't need Joe to get this from home. Joe can get his ass in here.
Interesting.
You know, he says it's an enclosed system.
Sure.
And you wonder, a lot of this stuff, do you really have to be that open so the Commonwealth Edison guy can work from home? Who cares if he can work from home? I mean, I know it's a lot more complicated than I'm making it, but some of these places, why are you? Obviously, if you're a target and you're taking Visa cards from people, and you're letting people come online into your ear, you're open to everybody, right? So you better be darn good at the security of it. But I mean, some of these places I don't think need to be, I'm not so sure here that I need to be able to access our RBC order entry system from home. Why should I? I'm here. No, how are you going to hack in if we're sitting here? I'm just saying.
Well, it can be done.
I'm saying a lot of places.
You know, I do it.
I know, but I'm a lot
I mean,
of.
I'm not hacking. I'm, you know, if I'm home and managing, I can see all my computers from home. You know, the same way as if I'm sitting here. The screens may be smaller, but other than that, and I can access all the information.
Well, my point is if it's done smarter, you could use the third party stuff like the SIBO did for the quotes in some of these places, and have your internal stuff for your stuff. Everything doesn't have to be on the internet, for God's sake, for people's convenience in their car. I'm talking about employees.
Does it have to be? No. But anymore, that's what everything's going towards.
Well, okay.
I mean, it just is. I mean, just sitting on the train and listening or whatever, oh, well, you know, I do 3 days at home and I can see everything. And I mean, the software is sprouting up for remote control and, you know, hopefully it's secured. Supposedly it's secured with, you know, triple firewalls, and each one has to have their own, you know, 9-digit code. So, I mean, I feel like it's pretty secure. That's how they've built their businesses. But it is convenient. You go out of town, you can work from out of town. I can manage accounts, you know, from, you know, theoretically even from a cruise ship. I mean,
well, that's true.
Not that I'm a cruise ship guy, but I could.
I somehow can't figure you on a cruise.
I went on one in March. I've only been on two in my life. They're interesting. The food certainly gets old after a while.
Well, the hey, question: why is
I ziplined on a cruise?
Ziplined?
Yeah, you zipline over the deck.
I have no interest in that.
It's fun. I did it a couple.
I'm not going to die by.
Falling in a pool?
The planet, no. Well, the pool I could fall into, but I'm not going to die by parachute jumping, eating by a shark, ziplining.
I liked it. It was fun.
Hey, from a trading standpoint, if I was still in a trading pit, I have a feeling this would be fun because every day in the morning, all you do is fade to move.
Right.
Obviously, with clients, you can't do that every day. It's not what you do.
If I'm wanting to be long, I pray for lower openings.
Yeah.
Pray. Because if it's a higher opening, I know it ain't going to last.
But, I mean, yesterday, how do you not, you know, if you're in the trading pit, how do you not lob 50 calls at them in the first trade if you can?
Right.
And buy them back 2 hours later, half a buck cheaper, a buck cheaper.
Right.
Then go to the bar or play basketball or do something. You know, but those days are gone. But it is kind of strange that we're making these moves, and every one of them seems a little too pronounced, every announcement, and then all of a sudden we come back the other way, whatever the announcement is, good or bad.
It's definitely the algorithms are pushing it. I mean, they have, you know, they say they're primed off key words from fundamentals or, you know, tweets or this or that. It's possible. I doubt it. I'm not sure they're that sophisticated to read every word from every tweet from anybody that makes, you know, that has power. I think it's just buy it here if it goes through here, and here's technical resistance, and buy it up beyond that or sell it down, and they just exacerbate the moves on a momentum basis, literally on a technical momentum basis, and then the market finds its footing, you know, downside or upside, and moves the other way.
People were doing that years and years ago, David. Remember when the dividend hounds were all over the place? They meant not the dividend hounds, the stock split hounds.
The flash crash, that was 2010, May of 2010.
No, what I'm saying is the stock split hounds for a long period of time, even though there was no basis in fact, decided that whenever a stock was going to split, stock always went up.
Oh, right.
Well, I mean, that was their theory. It's never
right.
been founded, but so they remember the old Reuters tape and the Dow Jones tape. Well, Dow
sure.
Jones is still there. Well,
ADP too.
But they had. Those things absolutely rigged that if anybody had an announcement that either mentioned the word split or if they voted to increase the number of shares, not outstanding, but the shares authorized, which would usually pre-split, they would immediately start buying. There were a bunch of guys on the floor had that software. So it's not new.
No.
But now the tweet part is new, I think, but it's the same thing.
Right.
But, you know, I think that I found we, if you have stuff that's moving, I mean, if you had a the protected index program wrapped around Boeing, that one went up $100, you wouldn't want to have calls against it, or already puts, really. But now the thing is becoming really the stock, other than the E-minis, is becoming the stock to trade. I bet you could roll your puts 10 times in the last 2 months in Boeing.
Oh yeah, when you find a range, you know, and it's basically I think 310 to 340 roughly, and you know it moves towards the upper end, you know, then you put the protection on, and you move towards the lower end, you take the protection off.
Well, you adjust it. You never get
right.
rid of it, but
you roll it.
Yeah, but I mean that for the first 5 years of the PIP program. David, from 98 to 2003, I don't think we rolled the puts three times. They crept up, sold the calls, everything kind of stayed kind of even, and you know, might have done it more than three times, but this idea of rolling the puts twice a week, it's good. I mean,
right.
It's not the design of the program, but it works fine.
Right.
But right now, why would you not, if you sold calls, this is, you know, I'll give one piece of advice, which I never normally do, but if you're a call seller, and we've been selling calls in the XLE, wherever you sell them for, 30, 40 cents, if it goes your way for a few days, be quick to buy them back at a nickel. Get them off, because you know, the thing's liable to go back up and sell them again. You know, don't leave the thing dangling. I can't pay a nickel for 2 weeks. Who knows? You might get another 40 cents out of it.
Sure.
But not many people, you know, think to do that. I'll sell it and wait till it goes out worthless. Well, why do you want to? This stuff is moving so fast. You don't want to have a trade on for 3 weeks like that.
No, I remember years and years and years ago. I mean, I don't know, 12 years ago or maybe 20 years ago, way before, you know, the demise with GM. It traded between 45 and 55 like clockwork for, I mean, not kidding around, like for 2 years.
Well, more than that. It was like, well, GE was 32 to 35 for damn near a decade, it seemed.
And it was, you know, still a dividend payer and relatively low multiple and whatever. So you'd get down near 45, you know, you'd sell 40 puts. If you got the stock, then you'd wait, you know, and sell calls. If you didn't get the stock, you'd keep the money. You'd buy the stock, you sell the calls, you know, up towards the high end of the range. You'd collect those. It was unbelievable. I mean, literally for years, you could just play that 45-55 range for forever. And you took a stock that was range bound and did virtually nothing, and with the dividend, you could turn it into a 15-20%, you know, yielder.
Yeah, easy.
It was unbelievable.
The only problem is the first day. It keeps going down.
Yeah, when it was when it went through 45, it wasn't so much fun anymore.
Oh, if you'd have done it for 2 years and had that's the thing about a covered writing program. I mean, if I'll just give some XYZ, if it's 70, and you keep selling the 75s at say $1 a couple of months, and you do that for 3 years, and you've got $15 built up, it becomes a little bit of a risk control device. But the first day, you sell it for $1. Now instead of your risk being 70, it's 69. It's a big difference. Not much.
Right.
So yeah, it's, what do you, there's going to come a time here, I think, David, though, that, when we do settle down here, the volatility is going to stay a little high. The implied volatility, you're probably going to want to be the next 3 or 4 years, you want to be at least a call seller in some of your stuff. Maybe not everything, but the idea that the last, 10 years, you didn't do any of that stuff because everything just crept up through your strikes. I think that ship might have sailed a little bit here, but we'll see. I mean,
I've been selling calls for years, and if they take the stock, you know what? You go on to a new venue.
Well,
I think that 16 and 17 on that creep and whatever, sell it and let them take it, and then you know they're still in between 5-10% breaks. You know, sell a put. And either collect the money or get the stock back cheaper, or if you can't, go on to the next ballpark.
Well, that's true, but sometimes it's hard to explain to people.
I bet 75% of the positions I've had have been covered, and I've lost a lot of stock. And you know, and being frank, in some cases, wept. You know, I thought, you know, when Apple went to $98. You know, if you sold 140 calls and got it taken away, that was thrilling. And I didn't think it was going to 230.
Well, that's right. And if you have a client that keeps staring at it every day over 140, then you got a problem.
Well, that's just the game.
So what do you
the next venue?
What do you make of this? Are we going to fly into the end of the year with a deal? With there's so much happening with China, I can't imagine quote a deal. But
I think there'll be a framework. I think there'll be some steps. I don't think they'll get what they want with intellectual property and, you know, forced partnership and all that stuff. But I think they'll get something, and I think it'll be positive. But you know, you got that overhanging. You got Fed. How many rate hikes next year in this, and what's the growth in profits going to be? And I think the British thing, I think the Brexit thing is of concern. So there's plenty of headwinds. I think we will creep up, but there'll be plenty of intermediary breaks in between. And I think you have to be patient. You buy a rally, like so many times we've said on the opening, especially early rallies are not to be bought. You can buy it cheaper, and on rallies, you know, you need some hedging, sell some calls, or liquidate some positions that you've been sitting through pain.
Well, I agree, and my question, David, on the thing I'm concerned about, the China stuff, you mentioned it, the intellectual property. I'm not so sure if what's his name, if he turned around and said, okay, what do you want, other than pontificating? What do we want? Do we not want Chinese to be able to buy companies here? If they do buy the company, then they don't get to look at the stuff that they just bought.
Well, I don't think it's that. I mean, you know, that if you're going to have a free market, an enterprise market, you have to let them do that. But it's that if I'm whatever, even McDonald's, if I open up a McDonald's franchise to sell hamburgers, I got a partner there. And then they'll see how, you know, the mechanism works for fast food hamburgers. That's what they object to.
Okay, so are we going to come up with
a forced partnership? That you, unless you're Starbucks, you don't seem to be able to go in without a partner.
All right, so are we going to tell McDonald's they can't go there?
McDonald's sold their franchises there.
Are we going to tell Boeing they can't sell planes there?
Well, that's the problem, and that is a big problem because you sell the jet. And they can find, you know, all the intellectual property that they want to just by tearing it apart.
And Boeing anticipates more sales in China in the next 20 years than here.
I know. It's wild.
Well, I mean, but are you going to put the Boeing chief in jail? Or are we just going to keep bitching at the Chinese? I mean, we know what they're doing.
Keep bitching at the Chinese the way it looks.
Yeah, I just... So what do you think? We're Thursday. You a buyer into next week or no? Or seller? Or nothing?
It only on breaks, and I'll sell on rallies. If you give me 3% up, I'll sell the market. And if you give me 2.5-3% down, I'll buy the market.
Yeah, I got to go with you on that. S&P futures up 350. Now we've been all over the place. S&P futures up 25. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.